Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The state reported 6 new Alaska resident COVID-19 cases yesterday, 3 in Anchorage and 1 apiece in the North Slope Borough, Palmer, and Wasilla, bringing the total resident case count to 761. The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services also announced 4 new non-resident cases yesterday. DHSS also announced 1 new hospitalization yesterday and 16 additional recovered cases. Nearly 91,000 COVID-19 tests have been conducted. University of Alaska President Jim Johnson is stepping down. Johnson's resignation was accepted during an emergency meeting of the University of Alaska Board of Regents yesterday. UA Vice President Michelle Rizik will serve as acting president effective immediately until an interim president can be appointed in July. KUAC's Robin reports.
The vote by the 11 regents was unanimous in accepting UA President Jim Johnson's resignation. UA Board of Regents Chair Sherry Beretta wrote in an announcement shortly after the noon executive session that the decision, quote, was mutual and made after considerable reflection by the board.
Really, the timing was right for a change in leadership, and there's no particular one issue that brought this to this decision. I think that there's many factors at play, and ultimately it was the right time.
She did not say if Johnson's recent recruitment by the University of Wisconsin, nor letters of no confidence by some UA faculty leaders, played a part in Johnson's leaving.
There are going to be significant changes that have to happen because of our financial position.
In the announcement after the meeting, Beretta complimented Johnson's dedication, saying he has led the university through unprecedented challenges with integrity, unparalleled effort, and distinction.
I have much high regard for President Johnson and his service to the university in the past, and just really wish him well.
In the announcement, Johnson was quoted, "It has been a real challenge leading the university over the last 5 years, but we made a lot of progress too. Looking forward, there is no institution more important for creating opportunities for Alaskans than the university." Johnson will be available to assist with the transition until July 1st when his resignation from the university goes into effect. The board will appoint an interim president after consulting with the 3 UA chancellors and other leaders, and we'll start a formal search for UA's next president later this year. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The investigation of the dumping of firefighting foam residue in gravel pits near Harding Lake in Salcha, south of Fairbanks, has turned up unexpected chemicals. The foam residue was from testing of firefighting systems at Eielson Air Force Base, and a local contractor, Rolling Stone Incorporated, had an approved plan to properly dispose of it, but instead an estimated 33,000 gallons of the 2% foam solution were dumped on the ground at 2 company-owned gravel pits off the Richardson Highway this spring. State Department of Environmental Conservation Preparedness and Response Manager Sarah Moore says, according to the foam manufacturer, it does not contain PFAS, but test results from 3 of 46 additional totes of the foam waste at the Rolling Stone gravel pits turned up the chemicals.
One of those 3 totes that we have results for contains PFAS, and 2 of those 3 totes contain a measurable amount of non-regulated fluorinated compounds.
On another front, Moore says preliminary results from tests on 2 area drinking water wells found another unexpected chemical.
The Army Corps of Engineer and the Air Force sampled both the Naughty Shop and the Salcha community wells, and we are able to confirm the presence of ethylene glycol in both wells, but there are some questions about the quality of that data. So DEC has collected additional samples for both of those wells in order to confirm those.
Moore says the origin of both chemicals is undetermined, and because there are a number of quality issues with the sampling results, she says the state has not issued any recommendations for drinking area groundwater.
But we have been in consultation with the Department of Health and Social Services, and we will continue to reassess that need as we get additional sampling results.
Meanwhile, Moore says the Army Corps of Engineers and the Air Force are preparing to test wells on private properties within a quarter mile of the dumping sites, but have declined to test for PFAS, so the state is stepping in to ensure people are drinking safe water.
We're going to get our own contract and go out and conduct that sampling.
Moore says the DEC anticipates having additional results, including from PFAS tests on samples from the Salcha public well, by Monday, June 29th. Two B-52 bombers from Eielson Air Force Base were used last week to help train U.S. and Japanese pilots in exercises held over the Sea of Japan. Air Force officials say the B-52s were deployed to Eielson to demonstrate that the base can be used to launch long-range missions across Asia. KiwiC's Tim Ellis reports.
The three slate-gray bombers temporarily assigned to Eielson have been busy pretty much since they flew in about 10 days ago. Soon after arrival, one of the B-52s went north to train with U.S. and Canadian fighter pilots over the Beaufort Sea to practice intercepting Russian aircraft that regularly fly near Alaskan airspace. Then, last week, two of the bombers flew in the opposite direction to train with U.S. and Japanese pilots over the Sea of Japan.
They happened to go towards the Sea of Japan, but they could have easily have gone over the pole towards a European theater if they needed to, or even further on if need be.
Colonel Dave Skolitsky commands the 354th Operations Group at Eielson, and he says the bombers' far-flung training missions also demonstrate Eielson's strategic location as an air power hub from which aircraft can reach just about anywhere around the Pacific and Indian Oceans.
You can get there in a single sortie with a bomber, with a fighter, with whatever aircraft you want.
Air Force officials say the three B-52s from Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana were brought to Eielson as part of an initiative to fly more missions around the Indo-Pacific region from different air bases located in the United States and overseas. A Pacific Air Force's news release says the training was intended to, quote, enhance the readiness and security of the region. Skolitsky says that's also basically the reason the Air Force is assigned two squadrons of F-35s to Eielson.
So as we grow this F-35 mission, now the U.S. has the ability to put that capability anywhere on the globe from here.
But it may be difficult to identify Eielson as the base from which future missions will be launched because both the Air Force and North American Aerospace Defense Command routinely decline to identify installations from which U.S. aircraft have been launched to intercept foreign aircraft that fly near Alaskan airspace. Reporting from Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Fairbanks maintained its 115-year Midnight Sun baseball game tradition over the weekend, despite obstacles including a game day rainstorm. The team that's hosted the annual Midnight Sun game at Fairbanks Groudon Park for the last 60 years, the Alaska Goalpanners, pulled the plug this spring due to pandemic concerns and a plan to replace it with a game between American Legion and local Adult League team All-Stars was foiled by torrential rain that flooded the field late Saturday afternoon.
You know, there's just so much working against the game this year, right?
Fairbanks Adult Amateur Baseball League President Christoph Falk says the game could have been postponed like it has been a few times in the game's history, but one of the Adult League players, Bill Robidoux, changed his mind.
And he said, hey, wait a minute. What do you think? Let's try to put together just two Adult League teams. So then I texted all the Adult League coaches to, you know, hey, let's pull this off. So I think, you know, it was one, important to keep the tradition going, and just as important to try to make it happen on the day.
Falk says a couple dozen Adult League players of all ages showed up and went to work on the drenched field.
Or about a little after 7, we started trickling in, no pun intended, and started working on the field, getting the water off the field. And one of the players had access to some, you know, small industrial sized pumps and wheelbarrows of dry dirt, take out the mud, remove some tarps, and we got the field in playing condition.
Falk says despite lingering drizzle, the game started as scheduled at 10 p.m. and included the traditional midnight break and singing of the Alaska flag song,
which is, you know, just as long of a tradition as the game itself.
Falk says the 115th edition of the Midnight Sun game, a 7-inning contest, wrapped up just before 1 a.m. I'm Dan Bross.